18th. And then the when he took out his citizenship paper, it said up here, see, the doctor was called at night, and I was born during the night. And his records, he was his office call was the 13th, and I was born during the night. And
So he gave you the 13th or the...
So they had the 13th there, but my parents always, in my baptism, everything's the 14th.
So you got your birthday cake on the 14th then? But then you had, legally, you had to have your 13th.
From now on, I've always had it the 14th till now when he did that, you know.
Oh, I see.
And so say they said, now I said, well, what do I do? Do I change it? They said, no, but you just mark the 13th if it's anything very legal that you have to. Otherwise, you can have it like you always used to have it. Because all the other certificates and everything is the 14th.
Yeah, I'm sitting together with Alice Dorothea Christina Johnson in Jamestown, New York. And you were born 1904, October 13th, in Jamestown. And this July 17th, 1985. So your parents, now they came from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reason for it, you think? Did they tell you about the...
They just wanted to come over. The father and the two older boys went over first and started to work and got work, and then they came back and got the mother and the two girls and the younger son.
So
and they settled over here. And of course, my father, he came over all on his own. He was a teenager. There were four boys, and he was the only one that came over. The others all stayed over there. But he had an uncle that talked him into coming, and so he came.
And they came from farming communities?
Mm-hmm. And Karlstorp, Vimarp, and Karlstorp, Klackenholt, and Vetlanda around in there.
So, about what time did I come over to the United States? So they arrived to North America, moved away 1880. April 16th. And the whole family came 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
June 14th. And he was, as they say, murare.
Mm-hmm.
And they was from Ökna,
uh-huh.
I Växjö stift. So, and they came here directly to
Jamestown. Mm-hmm.
So what did they start to work with here then at that time?
Well, they worked in Jersey Shore. At first, I think they did bricklaying and, you know, like that. And then my uncles went in on the railroad some, mm-hmm. too. But
so one was bricklaying.
But then he went into farming, my grandfather. He bought a farm.
Close
and he
Jamestown?
Had a, yeah, in Peck Settlement up here.
There.
Uh-huh. 2 miles from where I was born.
Oh, I see. So there was still farmland then at that time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It still is.
Uh-huh.
There's still farm there.
Oh, I see. There's no housing development going up there.
No, it's just...
Like the farmland?
Uh-huh.
And how big of a farm
not
did
too.
He...
Oh, not too big.
A couple of cars, 3-4 cars?
Yeah, just about, I guess.
But could he live there with his family without extra income, or?
Yeah, he did, I guess, as far as I remembered.
He didn't work in town or in any factories?
No, he just... My dad worked in the factory. My dad worked in the Atlas. Well, now it's Crawford Furniture.
Oh, in the furniture business, then?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Do you remember your grandparents?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
So you grew up with them, then?
Oh, yes, uh-huh. Oh, yes, I knew them.
Did they talk Swedish all the time?
Oh, yeah, I did too.
When you were growing up?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. We talked that at home all the time.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody visiting the family, they was all Swedish?
It was all Swedish, and I was confirmed in Swedish.
First Lutheran, or?
No, in the First Mission Church.
Oh, Mission Church.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that's located on Spring Street today.
Now, mm-hmm.
But it was at Chandler?
It was on Chandler Street next to the Lutheran Parsonage.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So your grandparents then, they were Covenanters from Sweden then, when we found Sven.
Yeah, they went to the Lutheran a little while, and then they went to the mission later. And my mother was confirmed in the First Lutheran, but the rest, I guess, were confirmed in the mission. I was confirmed in the mission.
In Swedish?
Mm-hmm.
So did you start out early to work after you... had confirmed, and what did you do then for her?
Well, when I graduated from high school, then I started a Crescent Tool Company.
As a secretary or
mm-hmm.
in the office?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
And I worked there until, 1926. Then I went down to Crawford and worked 2 years. And then we were married in 28. And then I sort of helped out the first year between the Crescent and the Atlas. And then our oldest girl was born. So then I didn't work until our youngest one was in junior high. Then I started working in the school system. And then I worked as a secretary in the library department for all the 10 elementary schools of the city.
Well, I see. You had a full-time job then.
Oh, yeah. I ordered all the books and mended them and checked them off and assisted the teachers, did inventory and stuff like that.
So you got married, you said, in 1928. And
mm-hmm. it
was
December.
Mr. J. Elof Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So your husband, Elof Johnson, he came in 1925 from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
From Sweden.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And he lived with his two brothers, a little with one, with the other. Ed and Fritz Johnson, and
they had been there earlier than
uh-huh. Yeah, Ed had been here quite a few years. He came as a teenager, and then Fritz, he'd been here quite a few years too. I don't remember when they did come.
So
and only the boys came over. The sisters all stayed in Sweden, so they never came over.
And the parents also stayed in Sweden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. His mother was 97. When she died, but his father died when he was 35.
Oh, I see. So he was...
Right after we were married, he passed away.
Mm-hmm. So his brothers now, were they working in the furniture industry?
Uh-huh. Ed was working in the Marvels, so then he went to work with him. And then his other brother was working at Crescent Tool. But he worked in the furniture factories, and then he started selling Hoover sweepers. Vacuum cleaners.
Was that before the 30s?
He was in 28. He started that, 1929. Hoover vacuum.
Was there a new gadget then in the household, the vacuum cleaner at that time? Or?
No, but they went house to house then. So he sold on commission from house to house. And learning the English language, he thought that was a good way. See, he was in the factory, and that was at the war. So they laid off so many people. He worked a little bit in the Marlin Rockwell ball bearing plant too, but then they were all laid off, and he worked at Norquist too. But then when he was laid off, it was right after we were married, and so then he thought, well, that would be a good chance to learn the language too. So he started selling from door to door.
You married 1928.
Uh-huh. December 5th.
Uh-huh. December
5th.
5th.
1928.
So they started to get bad times then in 1928.
Oh, that was very, that was all the whole depression then.
Did you continue to work though in the office where you were working?
Well, our daughter was born the next year in December.
Oh, I see. So, you
I worked until September that year. Then she was born in December.
I see.
And then we had 7 children, and we lost 2 premature shortly after birth, but we have the 5, and they're living.
So you were told off the pilot home then?
Oh, yes.
What happened in most cases when they married, two young people? Did the wife quit the work then or and stay home?
Usually. Quite often they did.
So they don't
some
back
did.
Today then. They
no, not as there. Much. They started to then, but not as much as what they do now. Of course, now they go right away and and start. But then they usually stayed home a while, and then of course it was just 17 to 21 months between each of ours, so that I stayed home until the youngest girl was in junior high.
And that was in the late 1930s then?
Mm-hmm.
So how was the Depression time? That must have been tough then to sell the
vacuum. It was bad, very bad.
Were there any sales made? I mean, people had so few dollars and cents to spend.
I know it, but it was very, very bad.
So he had the Jamestown, ton of Jamestown then?
Well, not all. There were four or five salesmen.
In the city of Jamestown?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he walked and
but they had, oh yes, he just went from door to door.
He had his vacuum cleaner with him.
Uh-huh. He had his car with him. And he'd go and make appointments and then go in and demonstrate them either in the then or in the evening.
So he called
them? So he went, either stopped at the house or called them and demonstrated them. And it was strictly commission. I know one week there, it went 9 weeks, he never sold one. Then he sold about seven or eight. And so you never knew, you know, from week to week what it was like.
So how many did he have to sell then to make a living in a month?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember that.
Because they didn't cost too much, I suppose, at that time.
No. Well, $9. They were around in the 70, 80. Mm-hmm.
And there was the upright?
Mm-hmm. Of course, they kept getting new ones each year, different models, but...
But they had vacuum cleaners in their homes before he came there, or?
Oh, yes.
So there was not a new thing then?
No, no. But they didn't carry them in the stores, and Bigelow's had it, and then they changed, went to Clark, and Clark Hardware was the only one that carried them. So you couldn't get them unless you got them through the salesman.
Yes, so they have,
but you see, then, after the Depression, then they brought them into all the stores. You can get them anywhere. And so, and then he did the service part, he took, did the service, and then he had charge of it one while, but he didn't like that. And so he, then he went back to just the service and the selling. And then he, I don't remember what year it was, he started his own business. Then he got, well, that must have been in, let's see, 30, in the 40s, probably. Then he started, he rented a place on Pine Street and started his own business, a sales and service.
What kind of service was that?
Cleaning, servicing the cleaners.
Oh, I see.
See, they were the only ones that did them. You couldn't get them serviced unless you went to the, they had a service place at Clark Hardware. But then he started his home.
In the late 30s, he also started to take schooling in preaching.
No, he didn't take any schooling in that. He had an uncle that used to go around and preach in Sweden, and he'd go with him. And lots of times he'd ask him to help or give a testimony, and he would. And he started, and he did preaching off and on there. And of course, they had an hour of Bible study in the schools all the time. And his home was, the pastors came and stayed, and they had services there. He grew up really with that environment, you know, and it was, his family was a very religious family. And so they, when he came over here, then they had this little group. They were, some had been, belonged to the mission, some had belonged to the Lutheran. So they called it the Lutheran Mission, Evangelical Lutheran Mission Association. And there were just a few. There was one group in Wisconsin and one in Chicago, one in Rockford, and one in Kansas. And there was one other place, I've forgotten. And so then they had him go out. It was in 1928. It was right after we were married. The fellow that was preaching in the little church down there on Buffalo Street, that was all Swedish. And of course, that's all he could preach was Swedish. And he would oftentimes preach if the other pastor couldn't. And he was over 80, so he wanted to quit. So then they asked him if he would take over. And he enjoyed speaking and preaching, so he did. And he used to speak at different organizations in town, you know. He was called on quite often to ladies' aids in different places. And so he took over and did that on Sundays and that. And so that was sort of part-time between his sweeper.
I see.
So that was right after, because I was at the hospital when he came up and said they had asked him if he would take it over. And
Det var Evangelisk-Lutherska Missionsföreningen i Amerika.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was organized 1903.
I don't remember when it was organized.
It was 1903.
Mm-hmm.
And was there actually an church here in Jamestown then?
Yes, on Buffalo Street, right next to the Ring School, that little shingle church.
On 2nd Street or 3rd Street?
No, as you go up Buffalo Street, just past Faulkner Street. You know where the water works?
Oh, yeah.
The light is there, that shingle church. It was a little one-room schoolhouse, and they used to meet there. We met some in the homes, but then they had that little, and there was a group, so the Swedish fellows used to go there. And then he would preach, and they were some that had come from the different Lutheran churches and the mission church here in town.
So they were offspring and offshoots from. Was they closer to the Mission Covenant, you think, or the Missionsvänner than the Lutherans? Were they more free, or how did they?
They were free, yeah.
So people could göra vittnesbörd.
Oh yes,
They could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they was different from the Lutherans then.
Yes, Yeah, it was a regular preacher.
Did he perform baptism?
Yeah, then it was in May 1930. Then he went to Osage City to the annual convention. Uh-huh. And then they ordained him or gave him the license to, they called it ordained. So he could baptize and marry and have funerals and give communion. And preach. He had the full
privilege to do the whole thing.
Yeah. So he started then, and we had some conventions here. There was a Reverend Carl Anderson. His picture's in there, in Chicago. And Reverend Vadim, he baptized our oldest daughter. Mm-hmm. He was from Stockholm, Wisconsin. And then there was some Carlsons in Rockford, and then there was a Steinbuck. I don't know if he was in Kansas. I don't remember where he was from, but I remember meeting him once.
So there was a membership then at this church?
Oh yes, there was a membership.
How many members could you have then, 125 or 50?
Oh, around that, around 100.
And they had members?
Yeah, we had a missionary group and we had quite a big Sunday school.
I see.
Mm-hmm. I have pictures here of the...
So you helped out too then with the Sunday school services?
Then he did the preaching Sundays and whatever there was needed. And he had confirmation classes. So.
And it was all in Swedish?
All in Swedish.
He never used English?
Mm-mm.
I see.
All was Swedish.
And how many years did he continue to do that at that church up there?
That was, I think it tells here, 1930 to 1942. And then you see our children were being confirmed. And there were so few down there that they, then they sold it to another church, and then we went into the First Lutheran then.
Oh, I see.
Dr. Miller, he baptized our twins. And then, Pastor Johnson, I guess Constant Johnson was here then. But our kids had been going to the Lutheran Bible camp up here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they seemed to want to go with them and be confirmed to some of their friends there. So then we joined the First Lutheran Church.
And this was the only Evangelisk-Lutherska Missionsföreningen in this area then,
mm-hmm.
in Jamestown?
Yeah.
There was nothing in Cain or Warren or Sheffield?
No.
Just the only one in the East?
Mm-hmm.
The only one in the East? How many were there?
Well, no, there's one in Massachusetts, Attleboro.
Attleboro?
Uh-huh, Pastor... what's his name now? In Attleboro. Hmm.
And they also dissolved later on then?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was more in the West?
Mm-hmm. Chicago and Osage and Rockford and Stockholm.
And did they dissolve also after a while? Or
mm-hmm. They finally did. Mm-hmm.
So there is no Evangelisk-Lutherska?
No, there is none now.
Mm-hmm. What happened to their records once it is sold?
Well, he had some here from the church here. I went down and looked today, but I didn't see them. I don't know, and I can't remember. I don't know if he what did become of them. See, Pastor, and Carlson, I think, was the last one. Mary Carl Anderson in Chicago.
So the headquarters then was in Osage or in Chicago?
Well, I don't know really where the headquarters were. See, he went to Osage. That's where the conference was that year when he was ordained. And Anderson and Vedin, the one in Stockholm and the one in Chicago, were really the ones that were in charge of it. His, the Anderson, it shows his.
Yeah, I saw that in the.
Mm-hmm. There, right there.
That's him. And he was from Sweden. And is anybody of the people mentioned here now in this author Jude living, you think? They're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
So your husband, Olof Johnson, was one of the last remaining pastors?
As far as I know.
You never had any contact with anybody?
Mm-mm.
From that time.
The son to that, Carl Anderson, is living. He's an organist in St. Charles, near Chicago.
Yeah, I know, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Organist in one of the Lutheran churches?
Or? No, in the Presbyterian church. He was, the last I knew.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh, and that's the only one that I know of that's, there might be some out in Massachusetts still living, I don't know.
On Attleboro, and
there were Truidsons and some of those out there that might be, I don't know.
How was the cooperation with other churches in that time in the 30s? Was it a dividing line between the Lutherans and the Covenants and the Christian Alliansen and the Baptists and Methodists?
Well, of course, for a while there were sharper lines between the Lutheran and the Mission. But I know those from all different churches came down to ours because we knew the different ones from there and, you know, were with them some. And he went and spoke in all the different churches he was asked to speak. In the different churches, so there wasn't that big a line then, but years before there had been. But after I grew up, we started going around to different churches, and then when our kids grew up, they belonged to a prayer group, and that was all the different churches. They were Mission and Lutheran and Methodist and all the different ones, and they're thinking of having a reunion now next year maybe. There's a group of them that have gotten together, and quite a few of those went in the ministry. Our son went in the ministry, and they were all very active. They had a radio program on Saturday. They met Saturday night for prayer, and then they had a radio program, 15 minutes on Sunday mornings, and the children, they gave the
And they went
program.
Over Jamestown and surrounding areas.
So. Mm-hmm.
So how was the service now conducted in your church?
Very free, like the Mission is done.
You had an organist playing the organ? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had an organist. Had,
what kind of hymnal was used?
Well, we had this started in. They'd had a men's choir, and then they started in on that Swedish Society. And, of course, they asked him to take that over, and he always enjoyed speaking, you know.
And be together with people.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a way of taking people.
Oh, yes. He liked people.
So this Nordens Budskap, there was the hymnal of this church, and it was called the Svenska Evangeliet.
I've got several of those if you want one.
Please, I'll be happy. And there was the Swedish Evangelical Lutheran Mission Association in America. And these songs now, in leading song, they're all Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in English.
No, nothing was English.
And were they taken from Swedish writing, or did they write them over here? Do you know some of the authors, like Svensk Folkmelodi, Tjenande?
Mm-hmm.
So they took some So this church was not organized in Sweden? It was organized.
Well, it was really from the Fosterland Stiftelsen in Sweden. And Mimna Trugna Vänner. That's what it was the outcome of. Because there they belonged to the Bibel Trugna Vänner and the Fosterland Stiftelsen.
So here you have Martin Luther and you have Nils Frykman. There's one author there, three Gittin.
I was confirmed by Andrew Frykman, Nils' son.
Son? Why? Well, he was the pastor in the First Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there you got some, though, in Alina Sandell also.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of Alina Sandell.
But here you have one by Fanny Crosby.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Testing after gentle sacred.
Quite a few of hers.
But the title is Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Alina Sandell, yeah, there's quite a few there. And here is one, Lov och Bön, Emil K. Now there's Elof K, was your husband's name, yeah.
Uh-huh. So... J. Elof.
So this one was used then, and you used an organ to for the music.
Mm-hmm. See, that was a little one-room schoolhouse, and then they built on. As they did pretty good there, and they built on a little bit. I don't know what all those papers
so
are.
So how did the service start out then, when you came in?
Well, usually...
10 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, we had Sunday school and then we had the service. And, well, usually there was Bible reading and a song
during
and prayer. And then he would speak and then a song. And it was just informal, just like you have any informal service.
What kind of altar did they use now? Did they use some picture or some like the...
And it was a regular altar.
Regular.
They had a regular pulpit there.
And
a railing around.
Mm-hmm. I see. And they gave the nattvarden, or what do you call it?
Mm-hmm. We passed that.
Small cups?
Mm-hmm. No. No, they passed the one cup, I think we did at the time.
Oh, I see. From member to member.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And then the pastor gave the bread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the benches, or did you go
mm-hmm.
up to the...
No, at the benches.
In the benches.
Mm-hmm.
And that was once a month?
No, not any particular time, I don't think. I can't remember if it was once a month or not. So that I've forgotten.
More seldom, perhaps, or...
It might have been that, once every month or every other month or something. It was, several times.
And then he read all the Bible.
Mm-hmm. And then he just spoke. He had nothing, notes or nothing.
No?
Mm-mm. He just
always
preached.
Always three. And that was from the pulpit. Did mm-hmm. he have a predikstol, as you call it?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke then for about an hour or 45 minutes?
Oh, no, he never spoke more than half an hour.
Oh, I see. So he was shorter than the Lutherans then?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Oh, because some people were reluctant to go to church because they
uh-huh.
went to sleep, they said.
Uh-huh.
But with him...
No, he comes to the point and I don't think he ever went over a half hour.
Oh, I see.
And they had quite a bit of singing and reading and so...
And then some of the members in the church, could they also speak and...
If they wanted to, they could. Uh-huh.
Did they read and something out of the Bible?
Well, not at the regular service, they didn't, but, and then, he usually did. Well, if he called on one of them or wanted to, any Sundays, they, instead of him, why they could,
mm-hmm.
but.
So he continued there all from 1930 up to 1942.
42. Mm-hmm.
And there was
yeah.
the
mm-hmm.
end of the church. How about the baptism? Now, did he baptize them in the church? In the mm-hmm.
Either in the church or at home, either way.
He went to the people's
mm-hmm.
home then, or the
yeah, either way.
Yeah. And funerals, were they conducted in the church?
Either at the church or at the funeral home or at the home, wherever. So.
So and they
and
the
same with the weddings too.
Mm-hmm. The church weddings too.
Mm-hmm. Either way. Mm-hmm.
Either way.
We did some at the house. Some came and knocked on the door, wanted to get married, and. And he married them, and if they came to the church or they wanted to have it in the church and have a regular big wedding, that was all right, too.
Uh-huh. So they nothing at all without the reservation for everything.
A couple times we had some that did.
So he had to be ready.
Yeah, I remember once I was getting supper and someone come and knocked on the door and wanted to get married.
So you had to be the witness then, I suppose. Uh-huh. So that was what happened. And the cemetery, was that shared with others? Det är sida nummer två, det är fortsättning på intervju med fru Alice Johnson, Jamestown, New York, och det är den 17 juli 1985. Så han predikar bara på svenska då?
That's all.
Det kände han till. And you had no trouble to understand it, and people that came to the church, they knew every line, so they felt comfortable then.
Mm-hmm.
How about now when some of those old-timers died later on in life, in the 50s and 60s and also up in the 70s, because he performed, I suppose, funerals at some occasions. Or, well, how about sick calls now? Did he also visit them in in their homes, at the hospital?
Of course, we weren't that many. You know, it wasn't that much, but...
But the old-timers, they wanted to hear then the Swedish... budskap.
Yeah.
Från Nordens budskap, en Lina Sandells sång.
Yeah.
Tryggare kan ingen vara. Which one in this book now was the most asked for?
Oh my, I don't know.
Did they have any particular one they liked to sing? You could hear by the singing in the church that really put their mind into it. Do you remember any special?
I don't know. No, I'm not very musical, so music to me isn't,
Your husband, could he play?
Oh, he could sing, he could play, he played by ear, and he had a very good voice, he sang a lot. And he solos and everything. So he, I don't know, there's several that we used to, but...
that's a big book, and it was... used every Sunday, and that was the only one they used.
Yeah, I
they didn't reprint it or made it changes, you know, like the Lutherans, the Covenants, they changed it every 10 years. But they didn't.
No.
They stayed with the same one.
Yeah, they had that most that I remember. Oh. That's the only one I remember of us having.
Was there no talk about going into English at any time with the sermons and singing?
Well, they did towards the, but then we were so few, you know, it was, and that they didn't think that they really, you know, they would start going to other churches too. And some came there and then they would belong to other churches too, you know. And we got to be after the Swedish went more and more away as the people started not coming over. After the immigration quit, you see, then they weren't coming. And so pretty soon there weren't too many. So most of those that were there knew the English and didn't know the Swedish. And those that were growing up, well, they'd had it, they understood it, but now our children, they understood most of it, but they didn't speak it.
You mentioned, Mrs. Johnson, that you spoke Swedish all the time in your home with your grandparents. And
most of the time,
So when you married Elof here now in 1928, on December 5, did you also exclusively use the Swedish language?
We did quite a bit when we went together. We switched. He was trying to learn the English, and we were trying to teach our children Swedish. And we were sort of struggling with both languages. But finally, with his work with the Hoovers and with the children going to school, and that, it finally turned over to the English, so we kind of lost out on the Swedish.
So your kids now, you had how many?
Five.
Five of them. Three boys and...
Four girls and one boy. We lost two boys.
How did they react now with this language question? I mean, they could hear you speak Swedish. Did they answer you back in Swedish?
No, English.
But they understood?
We could talk to them in Swedish. They would answer us in English.
And
we had a babysitter. She would not talk English. She had been here for many years, but she made up her mind she was not going to learn English. And she stayed here until she died. And she talked to our kids in Swedish all the time. And
there
they...
was an older person then.
Oh, yes. She was in her 80s, 70, 80.
She never spoke English.
Never spoke. And she helped her son. He had a soft drink company, you know. He sold pop, all kinds of pop, soft drinks. And she waited on people and everything. She would not speak English. And she understood it. The kids would talk to her in English. She would answer them in Swedish. And they would talk to her in Swedish, or she would talk to them in Swedish, and they would answer her in English.
And you never heard her speak an English word?
Never. She never would say Swedish, English.
Yeah, but how could she persist in a society?
She did.
So she stuck with the word. What was her name?
Mrs. Hornell.
Hornell.
Uh-huh.
And she was from Sweden, of course.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
What was the kind of idea she got to
I don't know.
Her children, of course, spoke.
Her children here and her grandchildren. But it made no difference to her. She just talked her Swedish and that was it.
So there was an idea. Mm-hmm. She attended your husband's
show? Oh, yeah, she came with it. And she was in our home much. And and she attended the whole time she was around.
Oh, you had good help in her and to be a good Swedish teacher. You could depend on her.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So I think what our children learned in Swedish, they learned more from her. Because after we got married, we taught, when the children started coming, we started in English. And from then on, it was English all the time, more and more. And because he needed it in his work, and the children were using it in school, and so we just... English took over. Now, when they went over to Sweden, they were wishing they had learned the Swedish more than they did.
So, do they still understand it?
There isn't much you can say, but what they know what you're
but
talking
about.
But
they don't want to express themselves in Swedish.
Two of them took a little bit in school, but not enough to really. They can say a little now and then, and when people talk, they know. But they don't, they can't carry on a conversation, really. The oldest girl, I think, can. When Elif's sister was here, she took her uptown, went shopping, and she could, things in the store, she knew, and could tell my sister-in-law what they were.
So, after this church disbanded then, you all, the whole family went into the First Lutheran. And then he started, he was actually the founder of the Swedish society at the...
Mr. Sanborn had it before.
So it was started before then, a short time before.
Mm-hmm.
But then he continued on there for 41 years.
He continued 41 years.
And he was
years.
In charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a tremendous interest and a lot of members were taken in and you had a big membership.
We had up to 560 for a while, but then you see now no one comes over, and now not as many use Swedish. So now our meetings even, our minutes are in English the last 2 years.
Is that because of impossible to get any Swedish
secretaries? You can't get any speakers and secretaries. Greta was the last secretary we were able to get.
But now the last one is gone, so you can't. You had to transfer over.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you discuss then at those meetings in the 1940s or in the 50s, for instance? What kind of project did you have
The Swedish Society?
To teach the young ones Swedish and customs?
We just had good devotional programs. We just had music, you know, and singing and speaking, just like what we'd had at church. And
so there was the First Lutheran Church auxiliary, so to speak, then?
Well, not auxiliary, really. It was just they had ladies' aids and they had missionary groups Luther leagues, and this was, it had been a brotherhood, and then it went into this Swedish society because they got to be more or less.
By 500 members, you took in Baptist and Methodist, it doesn't matter what.
Oh, no, we took in anyone.
And you had monthly meetings.
Mm-hmm. Once, except January. Then we always set up the whole program.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, you see, we met the first Tuesday of the month, and that was prayer week.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, and in a big church like First Lutheran, there were so many conflictions that it was hard to get another Tuesday. So we just, and with the, getting the program set up and everything, we just decided that we wouldn't have the January meeting. So we met all the other
months
except January.
So he devoted most of his time to this group, then, you would say?
Oh, yeah, he spent a lot of time. That was really his life, the Swedish Society. And then, of course, he had his sweeper. He had his own business.
He continued.
See, he started his on his own with that, and he had his own shop for many years.
Mm-hmm. So that became a pretty good business then?
He did a very good business in the his sales and service.
Still Hoover?
Mm-hmm.
He stuck with
And he stuck right with the Hoovers. And, yeah, he rented a place up there in on Pine Street, and then he went down on 2nd Street, and then he moved over another place on 2nd where they tore up and did that urban renewal now.
Nice.
And that's where he had his last shop there, and he did very good at that. People still have been calling. Even the last year he was alive, they were calling, wanting to know. And he had retired in 70.
Did he sell off then?
74. He sold out.
So what year or period of time was the best sales period? Was there a specific after the war or during the war?
After the war.
People got more money then.
Oh yes, it was pretty hard all during the war. It was a real depression. Yeah. I know even with our five kids, my all of us, sister-in-laws and some, we would switch, you know, we'd send the clothes when one child grew out of them, if the next family, my cousins, and we'd give the others, and we'd send them around to each other to get along.
So there was tough times.
It was tough, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But after that, it picked up, and he really, after he went on, while he was in with the Hoovers, he didn't do as good. But after he went on his own, he did very good. And of course, people respected him, and he did good work, and he was well known and well liked, and he liked people, so he did very good.
And you also went back to work after your last child went out of junior high.
Yeah.
They could take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still have the Swedish nursemaid to help you out in the home and so on? The one that only spoke Swedish, you said?
Oh, no, no, she died.
She died.
Yeah, she passed away when our, when our middle girl, the third girl was born. She was just a few months old when this lady passed away. Then we had another older lady that was Swedish too that used to take care, and then she passed away here, oh, maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So
how was the language now? That's always been a problem. You know, some like to hang on to it. Some churches hung on to it too long, they said, and some...
We had quite a time in that, both Lutheran and Missionary, you know.
So then they dropped out the young ones.
Mm-hmm. See, when I was confirmed, then they were starting to have the English after that. I think the class after I was English. And then from then on, they had English.
And
the services, you know, they didn't know which to have. And
so
finally, it was very confusing. But they dropped out more and more, and that was when we had to close up because we had to give up the Swedish.
But this lady you were talking about now, that refused to speak English, she had no trouble to go to church and listen to an English sermon, though. She could...
Well, they talked Swedish then.
At that time,
they still had it.
If she had gone, for instance, to an English church, she would understand what they were talking about.
I imagine she could understand.
But she wouldn't answer.
No, sir. She just would not learn English.
She can get Wittgenstein by English, God.
No, sir. She wouldn't even talk to our children in English or anyone.
So. She never mixed words either?
Mm-hmm. Never mixed them.
Did she people kept do that much when you were growing up? I mean,
No. And we had neighbors on our side, and on one side I would talk Swedish to the man and English to the lady. On the other side I'd talk Swedish to the just the reverse. And if I was talking to one, I'd talk Swedish. If I turned to the other one, I'd talk English.
And you had no trouble?
I just never thought. Automatic. It was just that way. It was so automatic that on one side of our street, they were all Swedish, but one was Catholic family. The other side were all Catholic, but one was Swedish. And all of us Swedish kids, of course, were. And when we went to each other's houses, sometimes we talked Swedish to their parents, sometimes English. And whichever one we talked Swedish, the one parent would learn English more. We talked English to them, and if they talked Swedish better, we talked Swedish to them. Us kids it was just automatic.
You never thought about it.
It never gave us, sometimes, and even I know when Elif would be up and he'd speak, all of a sudden he'd say something English and Swedish, they'd say, "This is Swedish," they'd say, and then he'd forget, you know, that he was saying something English. And oh, they were very particular at first that he not use any English.
Right.
But then little by little, why it crept in.
How about the Swedish, or the people that came from Sweden, like Elof Jansson here, and especially those who were older people, up in the 30s and 40s, they had trouble though. Didn't they mix Swedish any? They said Stolen or...
Yeah, they got to doing that. You did more or less.
They had a rough time to get hang of it. But when you went to school, you had no difficulties. You never thought about the difficulties.
No.
You could do the English in school and when you come home.
Yeah,
Swedish.
I was just so used to doing it Swedish at home. And then I didn't talk much English till I started in school. Of course, with the neighbor kids, a little and that.
But were they all Swedish around your neighborhood?
The one side of the street was Swedish and the other was English. But they used Swedish in the home so much then that, you know, and in the relatives, when the relatives got together, they used Swedish. So, you know, in our own circle, we used Swedish. But then if we got out, why, we used the English. I don't know, it just came natural.
How about company now? Did they go together? Like in Sweden, they had the custom, you know, to come together for Elva coffee, you know, and drink.
Yeah.
Did they do their hair to continue?
Oh, yes, they used to.
The ladies came together.
Oh,
know?
Yeah, they used
did.
To. My aunts and grandmother and them.
How often did they do that?
Oh, every now and then, you know. Several times during the week, you know, the neighbors would. And of course, my aunts, every name's day and every birthday or anything, they always saw.
To get an excuse to get together.
Uh-huh.
So, and then they were talking Swedish, of course.
Oh, yeah.
No English people invited?
No. Well, if they were.
Did they get it with the neighbors, though, of non-Swedish?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
They did?
Uh-huh.
There were no Italians living close to where you lived?
No, there weren't any on our street. But there were in the factory where Elif worked, where my dad worked.
How was the cooperation between the workers of different nations?
Oh, fine. Uh-huh.
There were no skirmishes? Mm-hmm.
There were Italians and Albanians. I know there was one Albanian that was very friendly. And even when he went to Albania, he brought a gift back for me and to my dad, you know, to give to me. I was just a little tot. And of course, when I started school, I walked to school with there were Italian and Jewish kids down the street that I walked to school with all the time.
Well, and you never thought about the different nationalities when you were growing up then?
That never bothered us any.
It never entered it. Yes, and but this, how about when you start to get older, to date boys? What did you want to say then?
Well, I didn't date any that weren't.
Yeah, who gave you the idea?
My mother died when I was 13.
Oh, I see. So she never...
So I
was...
How
about your grandma? Was she still living...
What
did she teach you? Your grandma now?
Well...
Did she sit down and talk common sense with you, what you should do here, and you should watch out?
No, she didn't bother. She let my mother
take care of her. She died, though. Did she get responsible?
Yes.
She,
well, no. My aunt was more than my grandmother to me. My grandmother lived a couple miles from there, And of course she came, she would come up now and then. But at 13, I was pretty well on my own. My dad took over. Uh-huh. He was like a mother and a father both.
And he didn't remarry or stay single? So
no.
Did you take care of the household then? Were you?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I baked bread before I went to school. He taught me to cook and bake, but my mother hadn't taught me.
So you had to learn early then how to bake?
Yeah.
How about washing? Did you?
Oh yeah, I did the washing with a scrub board.
It was a big family though.
No, I was just, I was the only child.
Oh, in your family, I see.
Uh-huh, so.
That's right.
And then my grandmother and my grandmother didn't move up until later. See, we had a two-family house, and we rented the upstairs. And she moved up later. See, she moved up the year before we were married, I believe, because my grandfather died, and she moved up later.
And that's why you started to work quite early then, too?
Mm-hmm. Well, I started after I got through high school. I was going to go to college, but I didn't. So I started where I got a job at Crescent Tool.
And it was an office, you said?
Mm-hmm.
How did you get that job? Through some friends or your father? Or?
I think I went to the employment.
Oh. So what were you able to do then, perform at that time? What kind of work? Were you type?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd had typing and shorthand.
In school?
Oh yeah, in high school.
Well, shorthand also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had typing and shorthand in high school. So, I worked first in the advertising there and then in the orders department and parcel post department. And then when I went to the Atlas, then I did, I did payroll and orders there.
Mm-hmm. So, was Crescent and Atlas unionized at that time?
I don't know. I guess they were.
Union,
no, huh? We're having a reunion tomorrow night, the Crescent Tool girls. And the one down the hall, we started school in first grade together. And we graduated together, got work together, and we could interchange our jobs, work together, switch our jobs, and we worked and the whole time together, and she was my bridesmaid. Now we're living on the same building, on the same floor.
So you have a lot of memories to share them. So you mentioned that Crescent Tool, that was Carl Peterson's work.
Yeah.
You remember him, of course.
Oh yeah, he was in the office there.
Now, what kind of a guy was he? Was soft-spoken, sweet, or?
Uh-huh, very, very, very pleasant. Very friendly and pleasant. A little tiny guy. Very nice. Yeah, he was
and
a very nice guy.
You get this idea with the Crescent tool industry. Did he invent some of it himself, or?
I suppose he did. I don't know too much. I think it tells in that Sega.
But it was a big company.
Oh yeah, that was a big company. We were 20 or 30 in the office.
In the office.
We were two floors of office.
And it was in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I quit there in 26, and then I went down to Crawford. Our Sunday school superintendent was one in the office at down at Crawford, and my dad wasn't too well, so I was kind of wanted to get down there, and he needed secretary, so he asked if I'd change it down there. So then I went down and worked there. And that was just below the hill from where we lived, so I could get home at noon and everything. And I'd be right there where my dad was working. He worked on a bus planer in the machine shop. Elif worked in the factory quite a while, too, before he started selling.
But the hard times then drove him out in the streets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you remember the Depression then?
Oh, yes, very well.
It was a tough time.
Very tough.
There were a lot of people. Who suffered the most, do you think, the families or the single person that wasn't married?
Well, I don't know. We just got married, and I know it was tough for us.
Because the married couple now, which is, and they couldn't very well move away from Jamestown because they didn't know what they're getting into. So, but the young single guy.
Yeah, they can move around.
Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
Yeah,
Chicago.
Different places.
Do they come back to Jamestown later on, the one that moved out in the 30s?
I don't know. Some probably did and some didn't.
They made a first move. And all the organizations, Vasa, Viking, and Brotherhood, they all...
We never belonged to any of those.
You didn't belong to those?
We didn't belong to any...
The church and the...
We belonged to the church, and that was it. That was his whole life. And that had always been mine, and that was, we were just active in the church, and that was it. And that's the way our children have been.
Well, but you mentioned, you're one of the sons.
He's a pastor, and our son-in-law is a pastor.
What church denomination is that?
A Lutheran.
A Lutheran?
Yeah, he went to Augustana.
I see. So he is a pastor?
Yeah, he's been, he interned in Texas, and then he was ordained, he was called to Dallas. And so they met in a little, in a school, in an auditorium of a school, and he worked that up, so they built a new church, and they were over 1,000. And then, of course, now they've gone down a few years. Now, 5 years ago, he started a new mission in Garland. That's about 30 miles from there. And he now he's got about 350 in his new congregation. He started knocking on doors and didn't know a soul. Went on 5,000 homes. He's got about 350. And I've got him. So he's,
So I suppose his dad was proud then of his son.
Yeah.
Following the ministry.
Yeah.
But your husband, he took over Fjellstedt and Rosenius.
He always read Rosenius every day.
Oh, he did?
Mm-hmm. And not Fjellstedt or the others, but Rosenius, he always read that.
What did he say about Waldenström?
Well, Waldenström, Fjellstedt, I don't know, they were
he didn't,
not too much either of those, but Rosenius he did. He's got that, what you call it, this thing here too.
Yeah, in Christus.
There he had it framed, yeah. But he has that book and he used to read that in his Bible every day. So
he was active all the way?
Very, he always studied that, always had, and always did.
Did he go back to Sweden at any time to visit?
Well, he went when his mother died. Then, let's see. Yeah, when his mother died, he went. Well, he went when his father died, the year before we were married. And then when he came back, then we got married. And then his mother lived to be 97. And then he went home and settled up everything for, and the mother moved in with one of his sisters. And then she lived to be 97. And then we went over in 1964, the first time I'd been over there. Mm-hmm. And then in 1970, we went over and took our youngest daughter with us. And then in 1974, we went again alone. And then our children went 2 years ago. The son that's a pastor and his wife and youngest son, and then our daughter here that's a nurse and her youngest daughter, and then our youngest daughter that's in Dallas. They all went over and visited.
So they have met?
They have met all.
Cousins and all.
I'm glad that they have met them now, so now they correspond with them and know them. And you see, that was how we met, was because our family were neighbors. And he came with greetings to my dad when he came over, his brother, and he came down with greetings. And that was when I got to know him. And of course, he was interested in the church, and I was active in the young people's. So then he went with me to the
First Covenant.
To the First Covenant. We got to going there, and then we started going together. We found out later on that way back we're cousins, way back, three, four generations.
Oh, I see. see. So you went steady then for about 3 years before you married.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he went to the Covenant Church then.
Mm-hmm.
Did he talk about starting another church then?
No, he would go to this other little church too, you know. And we went to the mission, but then they needed someone, and then we would go there too, and then when they needed someone to take over, when they asked him, we just went there. Huh? And